ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
For one who has conquered the mind, the super soul is already reached, for he has attained tranquility. To such a man, happiness and distress, heat and cold, honor and dishonor are all the same. So beginning from this verse and in the next two verses, Krishna is talking about the symptoms of a self-realized soul, one who is a perfected Ashtanga Yogi, one who has achieved the stage of Yoga Ruda. So in the last three classes, we were discussing on how to control the mind, because controlling the mind is one of the main activities of Ashtanga Yogi. In the first four verses of this chapter, Krishna was emphasizing on why should one perform work, why one cannot give up work. So one should perform Nishkama Karma Yoga for purification. At the same time, one should also endeavor to control the mind. And when both of the things are accomplished, when one comes to the Yoga Ruda stage, then one can be called as a self-realized soul. Then he exhibits the symptoms that are said in the three verses beginning from this verse. Chitatmana Prashantasya Paramatma Samahitaha. So last week what we saw was quite important. At least I would like all of you to recollect one or two points, because it is on befriending God, isn't it? On befriending God and me and mine consciousness. So these were the two main topics we discussed elaborately last week. Somebody would like to recollect a few points? Yes. Rantidev. At least we should think of others sometime in our life. If you are always thinking about ourselves, and if you are selfish, then one cannot have any peace of mind. So we give the example of Rantidev, how he was extending himself for the benefit of others. Yes, only a Krishna conscious person can be truly selfless. Very good point. Any other thing? Actually, this point we elaborated with so many examples. Huh? Yeah. Yes. Yes. Atmavat sarva bhuteshu. Whatever best we want for ourselves, we should do it for others. Yes. Yes. All that we need is a link with the Supreme Lord Krishna. So we were telling you the example, a story, isn't it? How, as long as we do not know the link, we will have envy towards other living entities. When we know the link, how Krishna is the father of every living entity, then when that link is established, then one can begin to love every living being. Correct. Yeah, I think that will make you all remember this point nicely. Okay? Any other point? Shesh is remembering a very important point. He's telling, if you slap a child and then seek some favor from the father, you will not get it. In the same way, if you offend Krishna's devotees and seek a favor from Krishna, you can't get it. So, one should not offend Krishna's devotees. Any other thing? Yes, life is like a mirror. It reflects back on us, correct? Yes, any other point? Some things on, you can say some things on how God is our only friend. That is a very important point. Huh? What did you say about Sanatana Goswami? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu embraced him. despite all the pores in his body which are oozing out. Only the Supreme Lord can love the living entity beyond limits. Nobody has as much love as Krishna has for us. We have no capacity to repay the love that Krishna is showing us. Isn't it? So Krishna is our only friend. Then? Somebody else from Prabhuji's side? Yeah? Yes, we have to shed all hypocrisy. To the degree to which we are hypocrites, our mind has to suffer. One cannot simultaneously be a hypocrite and a peaceful man. It's impossibility. Yeah? Yes. Yes, correct. Yes. Krishna is our only friend because all the other friends will come and go. They will die. They will perish. Even when we say sometimes, this is the best of my friends, I am ready to give my life. But the next lifetime, he may be in another family, he may be elsewhere. Or he may become Pakistani, he may be Indian. It's quite possible. Any other point? Yeah? Yes, very good point. We should try to discriminate everything by Shastra Chakshu. That means man should not act by instinct like animals. Animals can act according to their instinct. But man has to discriminate between good and bad, right and wrong, what is to be done and what is not to be done. That is a human being. So one who discriminates can be really peaceful. If you don't discriminate, if you act blindly, according to the modern just do it formula, just do it, what will happen? You have to just suffer it also. So just do it is actually acting according to instinct. And look before you leap is Shastra. Shastra says look twice before you leap. Don't act whimsically or by instinct. Yeah. Anything else? Yeah, Prashant? Yes. Yes, correct. That was told in which connection, which point? Service attitude, is it? Was it one of the points? Correct. I was saying, making this point that charity, love, before devotion, faith, all these things should be exercised, not just spoken. If you have to exercise them, then one has to practically serve the devotees. They have to be exercised, yes. So one should consider every other devotee to be worshipable. Yes. That temptation, yes. We have to give up temptations of all sorts. We should not even give any room for going in the place where temptations are present. Why? If somebody says, I went to the place of temptation but I escaped somehow, what will happen? Somebody remembers the answer? You escape from the temptations but not from the craving. The craving will result in restlessness, which will lead to lack of peace of mind. Okay. I think most of it is covered now, I think. Anikulyasa sankalpa. Whatever is favorable, we should accept. Right? And whatever is unfavorable, we should give it up. We should chant Hare Krishna always. He is remembering the most important point. That is our conclusion. So, we were saying that even one moment one should not keep one's mind idle. Idle man's brain is the devil's workshop. We were saying that the harsh plans and evil ideas, they generate in the mind. So we have to keep the source clean. Otherwise it's very dangerous. So we should always keep the mind engaged in Krishna's services, or Krishna thoughts. He's saying that I gave the example of the ladder and the demon, isn't it? So that was the thing. So last week what we discussed is quite important, which is actually the real solution. Other 2 weeks are also important, but they can be easily accomplished if you are following the last week's portion. So we have still more things to say about the Jitatmana Prashantasya. Because here in this shloka Krishna says, Jitatmana Prashantasya Paramatma Samahitaha Shitoshna Sukadukkeshu Tata Manapamanayu. If a man is undisturbed in the various dualities of the world and is able to perform his spiritual duties, then such a person is called as a self-realized person. Shita Ushna means heat and cold, that is pertinent to the body. Sukha Dukha is pertinent to the mind. Because sometimes you are happy, sometimes you are distressed. And similarly, mana, apamana, that also is for the mind. So, in this way, there are pains and pleasures applied to the body and mind. In all these situations, if one can remain equipoised and does not depart from his spiritual duties, then he can be called as a self-realized soul. Only such a person is a person who is self-realized or one who has complete control of the mind. Like many of us, when we hear about mind control, we think, oh, these are not so difficult, we can easily follow. But when you try to follow, you realize there is difficulty. When we are faced with happiness and distress, naturally we jump in happiness and we cry in suffering. Especially when you are put in a practical situation. That is why Prabhupada says, Matra, Asparsha, Asta, Kaunte, Shita, Ushna, Sukha, Dukkada. That also something similar is conveyed. That a housewife who is cooking in the kitchen, in summer she cannot say, now I won't cook, it's too hot. Isn't it? She has to anyway do her duty. Despite the difficulties in the kitchen, it's burning the body and it is sweating, still she has to do her duty. In the same way we see, in this world, there are so many difficulties for aspiring transcendentalists, as all of us are devotees. While trying to advance, there are going to be so many difficulties. But one has to tolerate all of them. Tam stitikshasva, he says. Tolerating them, one should try to advance. You can't say, let all the waves in the ocean subside. Only then I will have the guts to enter the ocean to take bath. Can you say like that? When are the waves going to subside? The very nature of the ocean is to produce waves. Similarly, the nature of material world is dukkhalayam. And it is temporary. And it is a place of misery. How can you say, only when everything is conducive in my spiritual life, then only I will practice spiritual life. Can you say that? You can't say that. So one should learn to tolerate all the ups and downs and still continue to practice in spiritual life. So how can one accomplish that? It is very much possible if one understands what is Krishna's will. If Krishna likes it, I better like it. If Krishna doesn't like it, I don't care whether I like it or not. This should be your formula. Like for example, if Krishna likes it, I better like it. Why do I say like that? Because generally you don't like what Krishna likes. Isn't it? Better you learn to like what Krishna likes. If Krishna likes you to chant Hare Krishna, but does your mind like it? It may not like it. But you should learn to like it. And if Krishna doesn't like it, like the four principles we are following, although the mind may constantly try to drag you down, still don't care whether you like it or not, just follow what Krishna wants you to follow. This should be your formula. If we make this as our formula, then it's possible for one to remain undisturbed, even in the face of dualities. So, this is the formula of devotees. Always they are remembering Krishna and Krishna's instruction. The entire purpose of Bhagavad Gita is to make understand Arjuna this one point. What is this point? If Krishna likes it, you better like it. If Krishna doesn't like it, don't care whether you like it or not. So, in the beginning, what was Arjuna doing? He was attached to what he liked. He never cared for what Krishna liked. In fact, he was trying to justify what he liked was correct. That's what Arjuna was trying to do. And he was miserably, he had to face failure. And still he was lamenting. But Krishna made him understand the entire Bhagavad Gita, and at the end Arjuna understood this point. So, one should always learn to make one's will in union with Krishna's will. This is the goal of life. Our Krishna conscious practices. Now we all are in the stage of sadhana bhakti. Certainly mind is uncontrolled. Mind is ripping us apart in different directions. Still, one should learn to make one's will into Krishna's will. It is very much important. Only two people are happy people. One is a Paramahamsa, who has controlled the mind and who is not controlled by the mind. He is always blissfully situated. Another one is a fool, who has no understanding of what is what, who is groping in the dark. He apparently appears to be happy. Like a drunkard, he appears to be happy. He may be smiling, but you know he is not happy. But anybody in between who is sane certainly has to be miserable in this world. The world is so designed that one can very easily realize this fact, that this world is a miserable place. But if somebody appears to be enjoying, happy, like a man who was sitting on a branch and he was cutting with the axe, so a brahmana was passing by, he saw this man. He told him, "Do you know what are you doing? It's only a matter of time. As soon as the branch breaks, you will break your head. You will fall on the ground, isn't it?" So a man may be doing some activity and appearing to be happy now, but eventually he will get the consequence. Such foolish people. And Paramahamsas, they have already gone beyond this material consciousness. So they are also happy. But those who are in between, they are disturbed. Why? Because they are pulled by two forces. On one hand, their mind is taking the association of false ego and being pulled to the activities of the world. On the other hand, devotees are pulling. You remember this point? You were saying two sides the devotee is pulled. Once the devotee is saying, come on, increase your number of rounds. Come to temple more often. Do this service. Give up this, give up that. They are pulling you and become Krishna conscious. On the other hand, materialists are pulling you. Come down. We are already in the gutter. You also come to gutter. Do like us. Give us company. So they are miserable people, but misery loves company. So they want somebody to give them company. So we are pulled by both the people. So this kind of turmoil will come in the life of every serious Krishna conscious devotee. The word serious is important. Why? Because as long as you are lukewarm, your life will appear to be peaceful. You know, as long as you are doing one round for 5 years, you will think, "I have no trouble, what is this Prabhupada speaking? I don't understand what is he saying. I am quite peaceful." Actually, you are quite peaceful in the deep slumber of Maya. Like morning, if you are sleeping in your house, if you don't keep alarm clock, are you disturbed at 5 o'clock? You appear to be peaceful. But if you keep the alarm clock is ringing, and then it is producing a sound which is hitting your head. Wake up, isn't it? Then the alarm clock appears to be a disturbance for you. Then you want to find out, where is it? I want to put it off. Some alarm clocks have the key behind, you cannot even locate it. By the time you locate it, you will be awake. So they purposely make it like that. So it appears to be a disturbance, but actually it is not a disturbance for you. It is for your ultimate good. Because once you wake up, then you can perform Mangalarati. But a person who says, "No, I am not disturbed, I am peacefully sleeping till 8 o'clock. What is the condition of such a man? He is already in Maya, and Maya need not take any action against him. He is lying on the lap of the witch of Maya. So they appear to be apparently peaceful, but actually they are sold out servants of Maya. Such people. Whereas a Krishna conscious devotee, he is living in the kingdom of Maya and rebelling against Maya and saying that, "I will not cooperate with you. I am Krishna's servant." So it is exactly like a spy living in the opposite kingdom. Can you imagine? If you are an Indian and you are in the Kargil war and you are entering into Pakistan's region and you are told to go and find out their secrets, just imagine what will happen to you. Very, very precarious situation. Once you are caught, they will cut your nose and ears and tongue and everything. Very dangerous situation. In the same way, we have come to the kingdom of Maya and we are declaring a war against Maya, saying that, "I will not cooperate with you." That's why many people say, "Oh, why to become serious in spiritual life? Better cooperate with the worldly people." So they can never go back to Godhead. It's not possible. No pains, no gains. But if one takes the side of Krishna and depends on Krishna for his strength, then he can conquer the mind and senses. Of course, we have no ability to conquer Maya. It is not possible. But by taking shelter of Krishna, we will get the strength to control the mind and the senses. Just like one time Srila Prabhupada was standing in the seashore, there was some small insect like a crab or something, crab I think. It was in the seashore. So Prabhupada wanted to explain this important point. How important is it to take shelter of Krishna? So he told Brahmananda Swami, who was a very huge bodied sadhu. The Prabhupada told him, "Brahmananda, catch that crab." So with his big body, he pounced on the crab to grab it. But very soon the crab immediately entered into the water. Once it entered into the water, he could not catch it. Then he again was searching for it. After some time, it again came out. Again, Brahmananda Swami pounced on it. Again, the crab went into the water. So Prabhupada was seeing the sight and laughing at him. He said, just see, you have such a big body. It is like shooting a mosquito with a machine gun. You don't need a machine gun to shoot a mosquito. Still, you cannot shoot a mosquito. In the same way, you are unable to catch this crab, such a small crab, although you have a big body. Do you know why? He asked him. He asked, why? Because it has taken shelter of the great. He said, it has taken shelter of the ocean. In the same way, you may be small, but if you take shelter of Krishna, who is great, then you are protected. You are always protected. So, we don't have to be afraid that, oh, I am waging a war against the entire Maya of the world. It's a practical impossibility. It is true, it's impossible. But by Krishna's mercy and shelter, it's very much easy for a devotee. And by such surrender, by learning to like what Krishna likes, we can very easily conquer Maya. On the other hand, you go in the outside world, all the billboards and hoardings, they are telling you, please like this, try to learn to like this. Like Pepsi Cola, if you see Pepsi, 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 they brainwash you like anything. So many boards, there are practically 20 to 25 boards, and your mind is reeling, seeing the same blue color, similar kind of font, wherever you see, similar symbol everywhere, and your mind goes crazy. And then, sometimes when you are sitting with your friends, they want to ask for a drink, and immediately your mouth tells you Pepsi, because you have seen it. This is the way they brainwash you, like this. If you don't like it, learn to like it. They are brainwashing you, Coca-Cola also like that. Anything. People, the advertisements are made in such a way to capture a person's mind and subdue it. So this is one way of capturing your mind, bombarding it with the same thing again and again. So this is what they are doing. And another subtle way is, be a different person from other people. Don't say the same thing what others say. Like they say, throw away all the cosmetics. Use our palm oil. You say, and then this is a different advertisement. Because every advertisement tells you, use our cosmetic, this cosmetic, that cosmetic. And then when you say something different from others, be different from others, then also your mind is attracted. And that you have seen, then you think, maybe, I have tried all cosmetics in my body and nobody looks at me. Now let me try this one by throwing away all my cosmetics. So people think that. So by gross ways and subtle ways, they are trying to capture the mind of a person. So the whole world is dictating to you, learn to like this. But here we say in the Shastra, if you get distracted by such invitations given by the worldly people, which are actually allurements of Maya, you will become victimized by Maya. You can never save yourself. One should live in the midst of ocean and not get wet. That is the secret. Just like a lotus leaf. Padma Bhaktram Vivambasa, he says. So, even while living in the world, one should not pay unnecessary attention to these things. Don't get distracted by the things of the world. On the other hand, try to find out what is Krishna's will, what is his desire. Learn to like that. If you can easily see, so many advertisements tell you that if you use this, you will become happy. If you do this, you will get that, get this. All cheating. You try that, you will eventually come to know. It's all bogus. But then you are only the one to come to know. Similarly, millions of people are cheated by these advertisements. But Krishna here not only says, you follow me, there are many, many souls in the past who have followed Krishna and who have been successful. And even in our times you can see genuine, faithful followers of Krishna who are truly becoming happy with nothing, not with all the things of the world. With nothing they are very happy. So why can't we put faith in Krishna's words? Then one can become peaceful. Jitātmana prashāntasya. One can become prashāntasya. Truly peaceful. Paramātmā samāhitaḥ. Such a person only achieves the super soul. Śītoṣṇa sukha dukkheṣu tatā māna apamānayo. So in all the situations one can be really peaceful. Māna apamāna will come. Somebody will glorify you. Somebody will throw rotten tomatoes on you. One can still be very peaceful, knowing that this is the nature of the world. So who is a person who can tolerate somebody throwing stones on him? Only a person who does not feel any happiness, even when glorified. Only such a person can easily tolerate somebody giving dishonor. You analyze this within your own heart by Viveka and Vichara, you can understand this. If somebody glorifies you, do you feel a sensation inside? Like some heat is coming inside. Somebody is glorifying me. To the degree to which you are feeling happy, to the same degree you will be miserable when somebody is finding fault with you. If somebody tells you. somebody tells you, oh, I thought you are a perfectionist, now you have proved that you are not so great, how do you feel? When somebody tells you, then you try to share your failure with so many people. That is why it is said, success has so many fathers and failure is an orphan. Isn't it? When you get success, immediately everyone tries to claim to be the father of the success. I did this, I only. Like when Prabhupada went to America and preached and came, so many people started saying that I have this connection with Prabhupada. Actually, I gave him the suggestion to go to America. I was telling him you can take a ticket from Murarji. I told him this, I told him that. Hundreds of people came after ISKCON became a successful movement in the entire world. They were trying to say that they have some connection to Prabhupada. But when Prabhupada really wanted to preach, even one man didn't turn up to help him. There was no one to go, even to send him off or to receive him in America. So, failure is often it is said. When you get failure, everyone tries to escape. I have no role here. Like that. So one should learn this art. Of tolerating insults, as I told you earlier. Shut your eyes to insults. To a degree you can shut your eyes to insults, to that degree you can also be equipoised even in happiness also. We will read the next verse also today. Jnana Vijnana Truptatma Kutastho Vijitendriyah Yukta Ityuchyate Yogi Samaroshtrasma Kanchanah. A person is said to be established in self-realization and is called a yogi when he is fully satisfied by virtue of acquired knowledge and realization. Such a person is situated in transcendence and is self-controlled. He sees everything, whether it be pebbles, stones or gold, as the same. Samaroshtrasma Kanchanah. Whether it be pebbles, stones or gold, as the same. So he says, Jnana Vijnana Tirptatma. Jnana means knowledge. Vijnana means realization. So Prabhupada, in the first sentence of the purport, he says, bookish knowledge without realization is useless. That's how he begins it. So there are so many people having bookish knowledge, but they have no realization. How is it like? It's like somebody who has very carefully memorized all the recipes of making delicious preparations by reading it from a cookbook. Something like there are many people learning catering. Nowadays there is catering technology. But till now they have not started even lighting the fire in their stove. So how good is that knowledge? It's useless. Because when you do it practically, there are going to be so many inabilities, so many difficulties. So realization means even if you know one recipe to make, then you have got the realization of it. Now you know how to make it, what not to do and what to do. Simply knowing the recipe is not enough. Similarly, the bookish knowledge or academic knowledge is not sufficient. One should have a practical realization of it. How do you know what is theoretical knowledge and what is practical knowledge? How do you know? Prabhupada gives understanding about that also. He says, if your knowledge is only academic knowledge, then over a period of time, that knowledge will delude you whenever you hear of apparent contradictions. Within the Shastra you will find there are so many contradictions, apparent contradiction. Like it is said in one place, a touching stool is abominable, one should take bath. In another place it is said, if you touch cow dung, it is pure. In the same way you will hear so many interpretations of different acharyas which apparently appear to contradict amongst themselves. But a devotee of the Lord knows that there can be multiple superlatives in spiritual life. There can be different viewpoints when you see them from different angles. Like it is said, Chitraketu, when he was watching at Shiva giving a class on Vairagya, but Parvati was sitting on his lap. So he laughed at him and he commented. So in one viewpoint, Prabhupada writes that actually he was not offending. He was just wondering. From another viewpoint he writes, Chitraketu was very proud. That is why he spoke like that. So people wonder why there is so much contradiction. There is no contradiction in the scripture. It is only because of our short-sightedness we see contradictions. We can understand that there can be many viewpoints. So if one has only academic knowledge, then over a period of time you will see they become deluded by such apparent contradictions and they leave Krishna consciousness and go away. Even after acquiring so much knowledge, there are practical examples. Even in our movement, people who became big Sanskrit scholars, after many years of living in the movement, sometimes they have left and gone away because of simply cultivating Sanskrit knowledge and seeing them from a Sanskrit viewpoint, not understanding the total meaning of a verse. Like sometimes you may see a Sanskrit verse, but the meaning may appear to be a little different because the acharya knows the total meaning of that verse. He may take another meaning from another verse and put it here and make the meaning complete for us to understand. So, if one is a devotee, one who has rendered practical service, then one can have realized knowledge. So, academic knowledge is not at all appreciated or given any specific importance in Vaishnava community. It doesn't mean that Vaishnavas are not supposed to be educated. Sometimes people get confused. They say, chanting, dancing is the conclusion. Chanting and dancing is the essence. Then why do we read all the scriptures and read them analytically and try to do all this? See, one who tries to analytically understand the Shastra is called as a Muni. Muni means a person who always does analytical study. But general Munis, if you see, those who are impersonalists, such Munis, every one of them have a different opinion. In fact, if you don't have a different opinion, then you are not given the privilege of being a Muni among the impersonalists. In order to be a Muni, you have to have a different opinion of your own about the absolute truth. That is why they have this, six philosophies, you know, Shadharma, they have six philosophies, all of them contradicting each other, all conducted by ordinary human beings. So, these are all Munis. But a devotee is also called as a Muni, but he is called as a Sthitadhir Muni. Sthitadhir Muni means a person who is analytical person, but who has already analyzed and come to a strong, determined conclusion that Krishna is supreme, I am his servant. And whatever Krishna says is true. So there is a philosophical speculation and mental speculation. These two are not the same. Mental speculation means you use your own mind and try to interpret things with the help of your own mind. But philosophical speculation means take the truth as given by God in the scripture and try to understand how it is correct. You understand the difference between the two? For example, Krishna says, Tasoham of Sukaunteya. He says, I am the taste of water. So a mental speculator, he thinks, how can God be taste of water? It's impossible. According to his mind, he understands and says, it cannot be true. He is a mental speculator. Whereas a philosophical speculator, he tries to understand how Krishna is taste of water. So Prabhupada gives examples. How, when you are thirsty after Pandanajal Ekadashi, which is going to come very soon, on 12th. So that day you will understand. Rasavam of Sukaunteya. You will get a practical vijnanam. Jnanam, vijnanam, both you will get. So, we get a practical realization of how Krishna is a taste of water. That is actually called as philosophical speculation. So in this way, we can understand that Vaishnavas also can read scriptures, scrutinizingly analyze them, understand them, but try to appreciate the knowledge that God has given without trying to put one's own ideas inside. You get the point? So this kind of analytical scrutinizing study is very much welcomeable even amongst Vaishnavas. Sometimes the impersonalists, like Prakashananda Saraswati, they condemn the Vaishnavas. They say, according to them, there are two categories of people. One, they call themselves, we are very philosophical and we are very advanced. We read the Vedanta and we have the deep study of Vedanta and we are very sober and grave and we don't mix with the general populace. And such people are actually called as reflective. And they say this is reflective religion, that is popular religion. According to them, popular religion means those who are fervently emotional, relentlessly enthusiastic and obstinately convinced to following as regards to the symbols and tradition and the scriptures. And such people who are having such obstinately convinced following, according to them, they hate even hearing reason, or they even fear getting education of what is right and what is wrong. So this is the definition of the Vaishnavas. So they think the Vaishnavas are simply emotional people, chanting, singing, accepting mythology. This is their understanding. of the Mayavadis. So according to them, Vaishnavas are not so educated, they have not so much knowledge, they just simply stand on an emotional platform. Actually, every one of these words, if you see, they have meaning. According to them, they are fervently emotional, relentlessly enthusiastic, obstinately convinced. So this is actually not an appreciation, it's not a compliment, but it's a criticism against the Vaishnavas, according to the impersonalist. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu proved to Prakashana Saraswati that it is not so. In fact, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed to him that if a religion is really healthy, then such a religion has to integrate emotion and feeling, emotion and intelligence. Only that can be considered a proper religion. A religion which blends emotion and intelligence only can be a proper religion. Because one may have intelligence, but that intelligence should be given a vent through the feelings and emotions, which is the practice of religion. So there is essence and there is ritual, which is important. Yes? Both are important. If you say essence is important and no rituals are important, then one becomes impersonalist. Like we see the Vedantists and the United States now, who are followers of Max Müller, they have the round table conference where they smoke hookah, they have illicit sex with as many number of women, and they break all principles, they eat meat, and according to them rituals are not essential. They say we are Atma, different from the body, so we are not responsible for the actions of the body, according to them. So we are different, we have realized we are different, so we can do whatever we want. So these are the so-called philosophers who claim only essence is important. And those who claim rituals are only important, what happens to them? They get caught up in such a fanatical understanding of religion, like the jihad, you know, Muslims. They have this so-called holy war, where they send out Muslims to behead the Hindus and submit as many number of heads as possible. And they are considered very great and they give them rewards for getting the heads of Hindus. Can you imagine? What a torturous way of preaching religion. This is the reason why people hate religion, killing other people of other religion. So when Prabhupada went to America, he never wanted to convert the Christians into Hindus. In fact, Prabhupada said, even I am not a Hindu. Prabhupada said, where is the word Hindu present in the Vedic literature? He cannot show one word anywhere in the, any of the four Vedas. Hindu is a word concocted by the Afghanist people. And actually we are followers of Sanatana Dharma, which says that we should love God. So Prabhupada said, I am a lover of God, and you follow Bible and you also love God. Or you follow Quran and you become a lover of God. So it is actually a true secular religion, the lover of God, to become a lover of God. So those who get caught up in rituals, they either become smartha brahmanas, like those who chant so many ritualistic mantras, but who do not know the essence, forgotten the essence. So both are two extremes. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very beautifully showed to Prakashana Saraswati how Vaishnava culture has a blend of both. We have rituals, like we have Mangala Arati, we have chanting, we have singing, we have dancing, we have prasad, everything. So Krishna consciousness is not just a philosophy, but it is a culture. On the other hand, we have a solid philosophy which gives a thorough understanding of Ishvara, Jiva, Prakriti, Kala, Karma, everything. So in this way, it is not only jnana, it is also vijnana, practical application of the philosophy. So as Krishna says here, jnana vijnana triptatma kutastho vijitendriyaha. So when one has both of this, jnana and vijnana, then one can be kutastha. One can be one in consciousness with the Supreme Lord. Then it is possible. If you have either of the two, then if you have only jnana, if you have don't realization, that is also not enough. The jnana should actually turn into realization gradually. So the gold, pebbles and the stone, they all are made up of ordinary material elements, earth, water, fire and ether. Why everyone is not able to perceive them to be equal? What is the problem? Because everyone perceives the same thing differently according to his mentality. Like if you see a beautiful woman, she is perceived differently by different people. Like a scientist may see the woman with some instruments and say, oh, there are so many atoms and molecules in the body, like that. And a yaksha may see the woman and may think, oh, here is a nice human being for my eating, I can eat flesh and drink blood. And a lusty man may see, oh, here is an object for my enjoyment. And the child may see and think, oh, wonderful, here is my mother to give me milk. So different people say the same object differently according to their level of perception. In the same way, gold, in Srimad Bhagavatam, there are very, very strong statements about gold and wealth and property and so many things. Like in Bhagavatam, it is said, gold is like yellow stool. It is said. Why gold is called as yellow stool? It says, just like a man who is feeling extreme cold in winter, cutting cold, while he is going in the forest, at a long distance he may see something very shining. That shine actually is coming because of the phosphorescence in a marshy land. But when he goes nearer, actually he is seeing that and he thinks it is fire. By going there, if I take shelter of that fire, my cold will go away. So he goes there, near that, and he realizes that it is simply a phosphorescence. There is no fire there. He is cheated when he goes nearby. Similarly, when a conditioned soul sees the gold, it appears that this gold is going to give me so much happiness. This gold is going to bring me so much joy. And it is going to increase my name and fame. We were discussing about it some classes ago. Why people are hankering for gold? Can you all say some reasons? I told you several reasons why people are hankering for gold. How many of you like gold? None of you like gold? Really? You all have become... Really, you don't like? Okay. So this is a liking. Okay. If you ask how many of you like, practically everyone may raise hands, isn't it? Why do we like gold? What's the reason? What is so special about gold? You can see it as Bhumi Rapa and Vayu Kam. It's also one of the material elements. What is so special about it? Yes? It gives you prestige. We were telling you many things, like you make ornaments and you wear it and you can make a show off to people and people will look at you and say you are rich and you look beautiful, isn't it? Or when you store gold biscuits in your cupboard, you feel a sense of security that now I don't have to worry about my future. Now, even for my grandson, I have a lot of money, so I will never become a beggar in my life. Isn't it? So you get satisfaction like that. Or even if you don't use that gold, simply keep it in the bureau. That gives a false sense of satisfaction that I am safe. Some kind of security it gives you. And what else is it? All sorts of sense gratification can be purchased by using gold. Because when you have wealth, you can purchase varieties of sense gratification. So in this way we can see, worldly people want gold due to various reasons. But the same gold can be a source of threat for a man, isn't it? People who store gold, many of them, their lives can be a threat. People, women who wear, sometimes women wear this gold earrings, their ears are cut by the thieves. Who would like to lose the ear? That's why I think nowadays women don't wear much gold then. So they are afraid of losing the ear or losing the neck. Sometimes the necks are cut and people take the chains. So it's very dangerous. Nowadays even to, show one's prestige to others, to impress others, is considered a danger. Like I was hearing in Bombay, I went one of the weeks. They said they have made a big, beautiful flat and it is only for elite people, not for ordinary man. One flat, if you have to buy, you have to spend some 50 lakhs or so. One flat, it's not even a bungalow. So huge flat, very, very massive flat. So they advertised and they said 1 year this entire flat has been Kali, nobody is purchasing it. You know the reason why? Because as soon as a person gives his name that I want to purchase it, immediately he gets 20-30 phone calls of blackmail cases. He said, my dear sir, I came to know you have booked the flat. Please kindly bring your Mercedes to such and such spot and leave it there if you want to maintain your life. Otherwise, just see, tomorrow you won't exist. Or your wife won't be there at home. This is the way they threat people. So when you have money or gold, it's a great threat. Sadhus, we are just freely wandering. We have no problem. Nobody, in fact, we are the most valuable thing. We have Krishna with us. But fools will not want to steal it from us. Isn't it? Only intelligent people look for that. And they also take it in a proper way. But foolish people are only wanting such materialistic things. And people who store it, who preserve it, they are at a great danger. So, as far as a devotee is concerned, if even a stone is of some help, a devotee will give a great concern for the stone. Then it is meaningful and valuable for him. But if gold is not of any value in Krishna's service, devotee doesn't even pay any attention to it. So samaloshtashma kanchana means he sees the gold, tables and stone, all of them alike. It is not very easy actually. It will take great maturity to see them alike. Do you know when does a person see them alike? At what stage can a person see them all alike? I think it's correct. Answer is correct. No? She said Brahmaputra Prasannatma. I want a little direct answer. Very easy answer. Yes. I expected a little different word, but the same answer. He says when there is no material attachment. The answer is when one gives up the propensity for sense gratification. Because only if you want sense gratification, you will need gold, you will need money, you will need this, that, so many things. When a person gives up the propensity for sense gratification, then one is satisfied with whatever Lord sends him. So, to see them equally, one has to come to the stage of Yadaginendriyartashu, Yadaginendriyarteshu, Na Karmasana Shujjate. He said in the second sloka. Same thing Krishna says. Sanshya Sanyasta Sankalpo, Yogi Bhavati Kashmir. He said. So, only when a person gives up sense gratification, then he can be called as a yogi. Then Samaloshtashma Kanchana. He sees them all alive. In the concluding verse, the next verse, Krishna says one step even higher. He says, Susan Mitraryudasena Madhyatta Desha Bandhushu Sadhush Kapita Papeshu Samabodhir Vishishyate. The person is said to be still further advanced when he regards all the honest, well-wishers, friends and enemies, the envious, the pious, the sinner, and those who are indifferent and impartial with an equal mind. So in the beginning stage of Paramatma realization, one comes to the stage of Samaloshtashma Kanchana. This is the beginning stage of Paramatma realization. As soon as the yogi realizes Paramatma a little bit, the beginning stage, he sees the pebbles and stone, gold, everything alike. But when his Paramatma realization deepens, then he comes to this stage where he sees all these people alike. Suhrit means well-wisher. Mitra means a friend. Udasena, one who is neither a friend nor enemy, who has no connection to you. He is Udasena, who is indifferent. Sasan Mitari Udasena, Madhyastha, Dvesha, Bandushu, Sadhu, Apeshu. All types of people, he sees them all alike. This is the most difficult thing to do. One can be equipoised in material things because they don't react back. You know? Whereas the people where in the bodies of people where the Atma is present, and they are reacting back, it's very, very difficult for one to see them all alike. Whom do you consider to be your friend in this world? Who is your friend? Can you tell me? This is a normal definition of a common man. Yes, one who helps you or enhances your sense gratification is considered to be your friend. Who is considered to be your enemy? Actually, this is not the correct answer, don't think. This is the understanding of common people. As one who puts hand in your sense gratification, or one who exposes you, isn't it? He is considered your enemy. Is it right or not? That's what people think in this world. Nobody likes to be exposed. I scratch your back, and you scratch my back. As long as both of us are scratching each other, let us be happy. And I will give you some gratification, and you give me some gratification. Then we are good friends. That is why you see, in a pond, you throw stones. You throw one stone there, one stone here, and two circles come. And they appear to be jolly in their own way. They have no problem. But when the ripples come bigger and bigger and bigger, when the circles come closer, when they hit each other, then there is a disturbance. Isn't it? You have seen in the pond. The same way, two people appear to be very intimate friends. Like there were two friends, actually they are brothers also, Nanda and Sananda. They were actually very intimate friends. And they were actually brothers. They were so intimate that they were enhancing each other's sense gratification. Always. And because of their strong bondage, they could accomplish so many things in the world. They practically conquered all the world. Even the demigods were made subordinate by them. And all the demigods went to Brahma. What could be done with these two people? Then Brahmaji created a very beautiful girl and asked her to go in front of them. And when she went in front of them, both of them saw her. And both of them wanted to enjoy her. So they didn't know what to do. Then they said, okay, let us have a fight. Whoever wins hand, we will take her. And they fought and had a terrible fight for several days and months together and ultimately killed one another. So these two people were intimate friends as long as there was no, interference in the sense gratification. But when the two circles interfere, then there is disturbance. Similarly, don't be very surprised when you see materialistic people behaving as good friends amongst themselves. It's only a matter of time. Sometime or the other, there will be a difference in opinion and there will be a big fight breaking between them. So, here is a yogi who sees his friend and enemy alike. See, to behave nicely towards a friend is not very difficult. After all, he is always severing your sense gratification. But to treat an enemy like a friend is very, very difficult. Actually, one wants to destroy one's enemy. One wants to vanquish. One doesn't want to even look at the enemy's face. So, this is a condition, this is the nature of a conditioned soul. There are so many examples in the lives of devotees, how a devotee looked at even an enemy as a friend. Like when Jesus was crucified in the cross, there were two thieves there. And both the thieves spoke to him. They were also actually crucified in a different cross. So one of the thieves was such a rogue, he was ridiculing Jesus. He said, just see, you have been a worshipper of God and you have been preaching about God. Ultimately, what happened to you? See the plight. This is why it is said, never worship God. Remain an atheist. He was telling. And he was laughing at him, although he was going to be crucified very soon. And Jesus said, oh my Lord, please forgive him, for he knows not what he speaks. So actually Jesus prayed for his enemy, one who was criticizing him. So Jesus said, he be forgiven, otherwise he will go to a hellish destination. On the other hand, there was another person, another thief on the other side. He saw Jesus and he said, oh Jesus, I have complete faith in you and in your preaching. You are a true son of God for bringing the message of God to the world. He said, somehow or other I have been a thief in my life and I have committed so many heinous acts. I don't know what is my destination. He said, will my Supreme Father forgive me for all my wrongdoings? And Jesus smiled at him and told him, my dear son, we both will meet at heaven this evening. He told him. So in this way we see, great souls, they don't discriminate between friend and enemy. They treat them all alike. When Nityananda Prabhu was stoned by Madai, when the stone hit his forehead and it was bleeding, he never bothered much about his bleeding. On the contrary, he requested Madai, he told him, Madai, this is not as much painful as when I consider that you are not ready to chant the Lord's names. Please chant Krishna's names. And he requested Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to forgive Jagai and Madai, although they were actually trying to kill Nityananda Prabhu or assault him. Still he requested the Lord to forgive them. So we can see many such examples. Even Haridas Thakur, when he was whipped in 21 marketplaces, he was constantly chanting Hare Krishna mantra, always. He never stopped chanting. In fact, if anybody else would have been in his place, they would have died in second or third marketplace. He was so strongly whipped. And after all that whip, the men became very, very tired. And Haridas Thakur felt sympathy for them. And actually, why was he whipped, do you know? For no reason. The Hindus told him that because you are a Muslim and you are trying to chant our God's names, we consider you an outcast. On the contrary, Muslims said, you are a Muslim, you are Muslim, and you are supposed to chant Allah's names and you are chanting Hindu God's name, so we also consider you outcast. So both of them considered him outcast. And although he was considered outcast, he never bothered about all this. And he continued to chant. But when the king came to know that he is chanting and many people are becoming attracted, he became very angry that you are converting people into Hindus. So he said, you should stop chanting. Otherwise, we will kill you by whipping you in all these marketplaces. So he was whipped in so many marketplaces. At last, he found these people tired and sweating. So he told them, I don't want to be a cause of trouble for you because king will be angry with both of you. So I am ready to die now. So he sat in meditation and gradually all his senses came to rest and it appeared that he died. So they took him and threw him in the Ganges and went and told the king, now we have finished him. He is dead. We have thrown him into the Ganges. And elsewhere, far away, the Ganges took him and again he came out of the Ganges and started chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare. In fact, Haridas Thakur said, even if you kill me and cut my body into millions of pieces, every piece will chant, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare. So this was Haridas Thakur. He never considered his enemy an enemy at all. He considered him to be a friend. In the same way, Yudhishthira is called as Ajata Shatru, one who has no enemies. Actually, any devotee of the Lord is actually Ajata Shatru. But there may be apparently some enemies who are envious of him, like Duryodhana was envious of Yudhishthira. But is Duryodhana enemy of Yudhishthira? What do you say? Yes or no? Duryodhana treated himself to be enemy of Yudhishthira, but Yudhishthira never considered Duryodhana his enemy. He always considered him a friend. He never treated him as an enemy. Here we will see a practical example today, and with that we will conclude today's class. One time, Duryodhana, when he was ruling in Hastinapur, he was very proud of his position and fame and everything, and he knew that the Pandavas are all in the forest suffering now. And although he has sent away the Pandavas to the forest, this jealous Duryodhan, he was still not satisfied. He not only wanted to send them to the forest, he wanted to either kill them or give them some kind of trouble always. He was interested in that. So he called Karna and Shakuni and told them that I am now surrounded by so many opulences. I have so much of wealth now. So how can I show this to Pandavas? Pandavas should see me in prosperity and they should weep tears. Seeing that tears, I can become truly satisfied in my mind. How can I accomplish that? And then his uncle Shakuni told him, now the Pandavas are in a place called as Dvaitavan in the forest. So if you go there, they all are easily available and you can go and display all your opulences to them. But Duryodhana knew pretty well that my father will not allow, Dhritarashtra will not allow. Then he asked Karna, what can be done, Karna? Because Dhritarashtra told him, now you send them to forest, now you be peaceful. All the wealth is yours now, enjoy it and don't interfere. Because Dhritarashtra knew very well that the Pandavas are already outraged and they have made so many promises to kill Duryodhana. So if he goes to forest, there may be some fight between the two and it may lead to a disastrous war. So thinking that, Dhritarashtra always warned him never to go into forest to meet the Pandavas. So Karna told him an idea. He said, Kshatriyas have one duty of supervising the counting of cattle. So in Dvaitavan, many of our sheep and cows are wandering there and our herdsmen are available there. So let us go there and tell our father that we are going to count the cattle. The Kshatriyas have the duty. So this way Dhritarashtra will allow and he will not come to know what we are doing. Duryodhana liked the idea. As soon as they proposed this idea to Dhritarashtra, Dhritarashtra understood, why are you saying like this? Why do you want to go only there? I heard that Pandavas are in that vicinity. Better don't go that side, better go elsewhere. And they didn't hear his advice. And they forced Dhritarashtra too much. And ultimately, because of his attachment, Dhritarashtra had to give them permission. And in this way, Duryodhana took 8,000 chariots, 9,000 horses, and thousands of women, and thousands of men, and infantry soldiers. In this way, accompanied by all this paraphernalia, Duryodhana entered into the forest of Dvaitavan. So 4 miles before the river, he arranged to make a large tent and beautiful bungalows within a short period of time. And everything was arranged and there were herdsmen waiting there and they counted the cattle. And then the herdsmen were very, very great experts in chanting and dancing and they performed all this for their entertainment. And he ate and drank and they enjoyed for a long time. And now he decided, he told his men, now you go to the river and in the shore of that river, I want to make many nice pleasure houses. And I want to display all the opulences that I have so that Pandavas can see me and burn with envy and they can suffer. So his men went there to the riverside and the other side of the river the Pandavas were living. And Yudhishthira at that time was performing a yajna called as Rajarishi Yajna. So he and Draupadi were sitting, they were actually taking ablutions of water
and were about to just begin a sacrifice. So the other men were observing them doing this. And Duryodhana's men, when they went to the shore and they were making preparations, immediately some celestial beings came out of the water. And they asked them, "Who are you? Why have you come here? Don't you know that this is the place of Chitrasena, the Gandharva? And not only this river, and all the neighborhood place, all the woodlands in the neighborhood, they all belong to Chitrasena. And nobody is allowed any entry here. Get out of here immediately, otherwise you have to face inevitable death." In this way they warned. Hearing this, all the Duryodhana's people, they went back to Duryodhana. And Duryodhana said, "Why are you bothering about all these Gandharvas? Drive them out. Take our soldiers, go and just drive them out. And start making the houses. Don't wait for them." Then they again went back with some soldiers. And when they met the Gandharvas, Gandharvas told them, "Oh, you are ready for a fight?" Gandharvas were very happy for a fight. They said, "We are celestial beings. And Duryodhana is an ordinary mortal. And he is trying to control us." Then they said, "If you are ready for a fight, come on. We will vanquish you in no time." So they had so many celestial weapons and so many things. And the fight broke out. At that time actually Duryodhana was far away in the inner regions of the forest, which was resounding with the sound of the peacocks. And there were beautiful birds chirping. There were swans. He was actually enjoying. He didn't know how serious was the war. And when he sent Karna, he realized even Karna is not able to defeat the Gandharvas. Then Karna, Dushasan, Duryodhan, all of them came. All the soldiers also came, and there was a big fight that ensued. And when Chitrasena, Gandharva, saw that the Kurus are overpowering Gandharvas, then he began to display his celestial weapons. Celestial weapons are very subtle weapons which cannot be faced by ordinary mortal. So when he displayed celestial weapons, it appeared that in all the directions Chitrasena was seen. Just imagine if you are seeing all around you the same person. Which person will you hit? So when this was seen by Karna, Karna became bewildered. He couldn't do anything. Nor could Duryodhana do anything. So very soon the Duryodhana's army was finished and they were all captivated with chains. And the Gandharvas won the war, and other Gandharvas went into the houses of the other soldiers and they brought all the women also. So the women, the soldiers, everyone was put chain, and they were about to take them to their celestial abode as captives. In the meantime, some of the Kurus, they ran to the other side of the river, escaping from this war, and they fell at the feet of Yudhishthir and told him that, "Oh, most virtuous one, see the plight of Duryodhana and his associates. We have come here to enjoy near the river for some time, but this Gandharvas have captured him. Please kindly do something to rescue all the Kurus." When Bhima heard it, he said, "Well done, wonderful, wonderful." He said, "What we are supposed to do, Gandharvas have done. This Duryodhana, actually, he came here, I know for what purpose did he come to this riverside. He wanted to make a show off. Now, he has been caught by the Gandharvas. So, real justice has been done to him. So, go back and ask him to suffer whatever consequences are meant for him to be suffered." But Yudhishthira heard this and he told Bhima, "Bhima, this is not proper for you to speak like this. He is our own brother." So he said, "Certainly we will arrange." He called all his brothers. He called Bhima, Arjuna, Nakula, Sahadev. And he told them that we are only 5, but they are 100. But when it comes to the question of family, we are actually 105. And we should not see any difference that he is our enemy. And he also said, "This Gandharvas know pretty well that we are on this side of the river. Still, they have dared to go into the houses and bring the woman out. So they have no right to touch other men's wives. It is considered a very sinful act." So he told Arjuna, "Immediately go and subdue them by your speech. If they don't hear, then have a war." He told them. Immediately he sent. And Arjuna and all other Pandavas except Yudhishthira, because Yudhishthira was that time performing sacrifice. So all of those, they took the weapons and chariots given by Kauravas and they went to the other side. And Arjuna shouted with a loud voice to the celestial gods, Gandharvas. He called them for a peace and they were not ready. They said, "We hear the instruction of only one person, and by remaining under his control, we are free from all misery. That is our Chitrasena, and we don't hear anybody else's words," they said. They were very proud out of because of their power. And Arjuna said, So let's begin a war. Then the war began and it broke out, and Pandavas very easily finished all the Gandharvas. Thousands of them were very easily destroyed. But then when Chitrasena came to know, then he again exhibited celestial weapons and mystical weapons. But Arjuna was a great expert in that, because he knew all kinds of weapons, he knew celestial weapons, because he had got training earlier. So Arjuna used the Shabdabhedi Bhaan and aimed at Chitrasena, and finally Chitrasena had to come and surrender. In fact, there is another pastime earlier in Mahabharata which explains about how Chitrasena and Arjuna were good friends even before. Now Chitrasena came and told Arjuna, "Don't you know who am I? I am your same friend. I was just having a nice play with you, fighting with you." He said, why Chitrasena came down? There was a reason. Because when Indra saw that the Kauravas are going to forest to display their opulence to Pandavas, he became very angry. He told Chitrasena, "Go and curb their pride and capture all of them and bring them to me." So that is why Chitrasena had come with all his Gandharvas there. So anyway, Arjuna told, "This is the order of our elder brother, Yudhishthir. So you cannot take them with you. Please kindly deliver all of them." Then all of them with their chains, they went to Yudhishthir, and Chitrasena, with the permission of Yudhishthir, left Duryodhana and his people, and he went away. So Yudhishthir saw Duryodhana and he told him, "My dear child, never be so harsh. Being harsh can never lead you to any satisfaction of mind. Learn to live peacefully. Whatever wealth and opulences God has given you, have them, enjoy them, and be peaceful. Don't try to offend others and be harsh on others." He told him and he sent him away. So we can see the behavior of Yudhishthir, how although Duryodhana was a sworn enemy and he has been planning from time to time to kill not only the Pandavas in general but anybody connected to Pandavas. He tried to build a big Lakshagraha in Varanavrat and destroy the Pandavas by burning them. And he sent Durvasamuni to their house in the forest so that Durvasamuni may curse them because they won't have any food to eat, food to offer him. And he also tried to kill Bhima when he was even a small boy by food poisoning him. So Duryodhana, from day one they met Duryodhana, Duryodhana has been endeavoring to kill the Pandavas. So Pandavas openly knew that this is our enemy. Not only that, beyond that, Draupadi was openly humiliated in the court, in front of all the generals and all the soldiers and men in the court. In fact, all of them were controlling their anger, and many of them were controlling their weeping, and they had actually no words to say. And Duryodhana openly humiliated Draupadi in front of everyone. And even there, if you have observed carefully, Bhima took a vow that this Dushasan, I will rip apart his heart and throw his heart away, and I will drink his blood and give his blood to Draupadi to put it on her hair. So he took this vow. And when Duryodhana showed his thigh and told Draupadi, "Now you have been staked by the Pandavas and I have won you. So Draupadi, don't depend on your old lords. Come and sit on my thighs." Then Bhima became so enraged. He became so uncontrollable. It is said sparks were coming from his eyes and ears and nose and mouth. And he was like an uncontrollable ocean which is ready to swell and devour the entire country. So he shouted at Duryodhana. He said, "If I don't break the thighs of Duryodhana, let me not go to the higher destination of my forefathers." So he took a vow like that. Even Arjuna took a vow. Even Nakula Sahadev, they also took a vow. Only Yudhishthira did not take any vow. He was the only one who was just calm, sitting, and he didn't say anything. At last, we see how Dhritarashtra left them to go and they all went back. So Yudhishthira was very, very glorified for his virtue, and one of his greatest virtues was that he was Ajatashatru. He was actually a friend of everyone. Similarly, a pure devotee of the Lord is considered to be a friend of everyone. Some weeks ago we saw how Krishna is the real friend of everyone. Now, the development of that concept is not only Krishna is a friend of everyone, but also his pure devotees. They are also a friend of everyone. So, in whom can he put trust? He can put trust either in Krishna or in any of his pure devotees. He can put complete trust. Because a pure devotee is a harmless person. He cannot cause any harm to you. Even if you are his enemy. See the beauty. A pure devotee cannot cause any harm even to his enemy. So a pure devotee, even if you know somebody is trying to do some harm to me, he will not cause any harm to him. This kind of quality is very, very rare. Narada Muni was like that. Narada Muni, when he went to forest, he met Mrigari. Mrigari was actually a dangerous hunter who was half killing animals. So nobody would ever dare to go in the forest in that direction. But Narada Muni went there at the threat of being killed, and he met him personally and preached to him and made him into a devotee. This is Narada Muni. So Narada Muni is famous for treating such people and making them devotees. Like Valya Gaula, he made him into Valmiki. And Srila Prabhupada, he is the jet age Narada Muni. He is the modern Narada Muni. Because if you very carefully compare Prabhupada's life to Narada Muni's life, there are so many similarities. Narada Muni was specially famous for delivering very fallen people. And Prabhupada also went to the United States of America. And it is said in the Bowery, when he was preaching, one man used to have a habit of shooting anybody there. Just he will be sitting there, and whenever he feels like shooting, he will shoot at a person who is passing by. That was his hobby. So Prabhupada has passed in that road so many times. Later on, his disciples told him, when they came to know that Prabhupada was passing in that road, they were shivering. They said, "Do you know that person? He always shoots. That is his hobby, to shoot." So Prabhupada was living in the midst of such people who were having shooting men as their hobby, or who were taking LSD and going crazy, and people who are very, very fallen. Who can go in the midst of such people? When Prabhupada was going to America, he never thought he was going to come back. He was telling, "My Guru Maharaj has ordered me to preach in America. I'll preach there, and if the situation forces me to die there, I will die. Even if I am not able to make any devotee, at least I will have the satisfaction that I have fulfilled the order of my Guru." So it's not that Prabhupada had a lot of support, or Prabhupada had everything with him. He had nothing actually. And he lived in the midst of the most dangerous people. And there were many enemies also. When Prabhupada preached in America and returned back, there were so many Indians who were criticizing him. There are people who have a tendency that they will neither do good nor will they appreciate someone else doing good. They can do only one thing, just criticize others. You have seen people like that? Ramachandrapuri is a typical example. Neither you do good nor you appreciate others doing good. When others do good, you become envious and you find fault with them. This tendency is a very, very bestial tendency that some people have. So when Prabhupada returned to India, there were many people saying that, why did he give Brahman Diksha to the Mlecha people, Americans? These Mlechas, they are coming and preaching Bhagavad Gita to us. We are Indians, we know Bhagavad Gita. We are Hindus. They claim to be Hindus, they claim to be knowing Bhagavad Gita, and they are wearing a sacred thread, but they are eating meat. I have seen so many of my college mates. When I used to invite them for ISKCON classes, they would say, "We are Indian, I come from a Brahmin family, and I should hear from an American. Why should I? I am too busy eating eggs now. I am too busy eating meat now. I cannot come for the class." And this is the kind of Brahmin we see in India. So they are envious of Americans. They were Mlechas certainly once upon a time. But what is the condition now? Now they have become reformed and they have become great saintly persons. Why do you criticize them? Why can't you be broad-minded to appreciate the devotional quality in them? In fact, they are exhibiting so many wonderful qualities. They have renounced the entire world. They are just walking in the surface of the globe, preaching business, selflessly, torturing their body, giving all their time to appreciate them. Why should we be fanatically attached to being a Brahmin ourselves and saying that they cannot preach? Prabhupada said, "Indians doing suggestion. They will say, do this, do that. But you tell them to dedicate, they won't dedicate. They'll run away." There are so many Indian Brahmins who give suggestion, but none of them dedicated their life to Prabhupada when he wanted to preach. Only Americans dedicate their lives. Why can't we appreciate them? Prasanna Saraswati tells a story in this connection. He says, there was one a small boy called Pencho in a village, you know. So this boy was a small boy, 4 or 5 years old, and he used to always roam naked in the village, here and there. And people used to call him Naked Pencho. So when he grew up, he became a very honest and sincere boy, faithful in his studies. And he became very well known to people. Everyone appreciated him. And he became actually a lawyer, eventually, for a period of time. He studied law. And then gradually he became an advocate, and then later on he was promoted to the stage of a high court judge. And when the news came to the village, those people who were living in the neighborhood of his house, who did not like his father. When they came to know that he studied law, they were saying, how is it possible that this boy is studying law? After all, he is a naked pencher wandering in the village, they said. And later on they came to know that he became a lawyer, he became an advocate, and then he became a high court judge. Then they were saying that actually maybe he is a judge in the court, but he must not be taking any salary, they were saying. Simply without salary he is just working there in the job, that's why they have given him such a job, they were saying. So they were always criticizing him right from the beginning. So this is the tendency of the smartha brahmanas. They always find fault with other people. Even after they become qualified Vaishnavas, they were finding fault. So they were criticizing Prabhupada that he is making brahmanas outside India or so many things like that. They criticized Prabhupada for so many things. If you go all around India, you will come to know how people criticize. Even when one is doing good. But Prabhupada never treated them as his enemy. He was even telling his people, go and preach everywhere. Let all people become devotees. So Prabhupada never considered anybody his enemy. Even if somebody would speak harshly with Prabhupada, actually Prabhupada would tell the devotees, please give him some prasadam. One time in Juhu, there was one Mr. Patel. You all must be knowing. So this Patel used to have very heated arguments with Prabhupada regarding Mayavad philosophy. And Prabhupada would say, you have to smash the Mayavadis, you have to, you know, smash their philosophy. Very strong discussions used to go on. Very interesting, if you read Prabhupada's conversations, when you read them, you will become terrified. It's like a Kurukshetra war. Very nice discussions. And after all that, he would say, Patel would say, that Prabhupada, you are too harsh in your speech, you are too strong in criticism. Prabhupada used to say, I have to be harsh. If you are not properly preaching, then people will be misled. People will be going in the wrong direction. And after that, Prabhupada would say, okay, Mr. Patel, come, let's have Mahaprasad. Let us sit together and we'll have Radha Raspihari Mahaprasad. So they would be sitting and very nicely having Prasad, and he would have friendly talks with him, asking him about his family and friends. So you may be surprised how Prabhupada was speaking so harshly and so strongly. Whenever you are very angry with someone, just see, when you are angry, the culmination of that anger is you become an enemy. That's all. After that, you cannot even look at the face of the person. Right? Isn't it? Whenever two people have a harsh speech, what is the culmination? Then afterwards, the relationship becomes permanently broken. It's very difficult to repair. But Prabhupada would be strongly speaking, but he had no enemies at all. He is condemning scientists so strongly. One time there was one Stalin professor. So when the professor came with all his students, Prabhupada told him, you are a cheater. In front of all his students, he told him, you are a cheater. Then Prabhupada gave an explanation why he was a cheater. He said, you are not coming in parampara, you don't have proper knowledge, you don't even know God, simply you have submitted thesis on religion, but you yourself are not practicing religion, then how can you give this knowledge to your students? Then after that, Professor Stalin went away and his students were asking questions to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada told them, blind leading the blind, all going into a ditch. So if you follow a man who is blind, you can never achieve God. And many of them actually became later on followers of Prabhupada. But this man Stalin, he submitted a letter glorifying Prabhupada. He said, here is one man I have seen in my life who is genuine sadhu from India. Because before that there was some Swami who is very famous worldwide. When he went to America, the American scientists came to him and asked him, what do you think of America? He said, America is wonderful. Make more and more technological progress like you are doing now. My good wishes to you, he told them. He told Americans actually. He was appreciating their science and technology and asked them to go ahead and ahead in their civilization. But Prabhupada, when he was asked about American civilization, he said, it's a civilization of cats and dogs, he said. It is a civilization of cats and dogs. He said, in America, even one who is holding a doctorate degree cannot control his mind and senses. He is going to the pubs and clubs where he is hankering for the company of women and wine and meat. Whereas even a simple boy, uneducated boy from India, I can show you that he is so controlled in his mind and senses that he doesn't depend on all these things, even without any education. So Prabhupada used to challenge the scientists. What has your education done? Despite getting a doctorate degree, have you become civilized? People are very proud that now we are civilized. We are wearing coat, pants, suit, tie and shaking hands. We are very civilized. But Prabhupada used to ask, what kind of civilization? You can even do the same for dogs also. You can take a dog and put him coat, suit, tie and, you know, he can look like a gentleman. That doesn't make him a gentleman. So simply your mundane education doesn't make you a gentleman. So if you claim to be civilized, then why even after getting a doctorate degree, these boys are going to the clubs, nightclubs? So real civilization means to raise the standard of life of a human being by making him give up all the bad tendencies like meat eating, gambling, intoxication, illicit sex, and to cultivate virtuous qualities like kshama, dama, tapas, shaucham, faithfulness, austerity, honesty, simplicity, love towards every living being. This is actually a civilized life. According to Chanakya, civilized life means to see every other woman as a mother and to atma sarva bhuteshu, treating others as oneself. So Prabhupada was very, very strongly preaching. He never scolded anyone. Although he spoke strongly at certain times and he spoke very lovingly at certain times, no one was his enemy. Everyone was his friend. This is a proof. Stalin is giving a letter that here is a genuine sadhu in my life I have seen. Now I am feeling so satisfied that even in such an age as Kali Yuga, there are genuine sadhus roaming in the world. So he was appreciating from the core of his heart when he saw that there are true Vaishnavas to expose all the cheaters. So there are so many so-called Hindu Swamis going from India. According to them, religious means some pompous display and ostentatious demonstration, and you make a show of religion so that you will have thousands of followers. And then such Swamis, later on, so many things happen to them, and they come back to India, or they teach a kind of show about religion which has no essence, which has no substance. Here we see Srila Prabhupada, how he gave so much philosophy in his books. Not only he gave jnana, but he gave vijnana, how to practice it and realize it in everyone's life. And he had no enemies. So as devotees, we also have to learn to behave like this towards everyone. We should never treat an enemy as an enemy. As Jesus said, hate not the sinner, hate the sin, he said. So if somebody is diseased and you are keeping a distance from him, do you hate him? You should not hate. Why should you hate? You should hate the disease. If somebody has tuberculosis, you should not go near him, because when he is coughing, then you will also get TB. So you don't go near him. But at the same time, you don't have to have any aversion towards him. You can always help him to go to a doctor and get some medicine. Similarly, when you see demoniac people, help him to go to a spiritual doctor, some devotee, by which they can get Krishna consciousness and become purified. Why do you hate them? So as devotees, you should never think these are demons, these are materialistic people. If you are always thinking like that, when you go out, you look, everyone is having a horn and teeth, you know. Everyone look around, everyone is demon, I am only a devotee. You think like that. You should learn to see the spiritual in the heart of everyone. And we should learn to see the Paramatma sitting in the heart of everyone. So when Paramatma realization deepens, then a person can achieve this vision. Because he has already begun seeing the Paramatma in the heart of every living being. What is the shloka? Anybody knows? Vidyagniya sampanne Ramane Gavihasani Shinichava Shapakecha Pandita Samadarshina. Because when Paramatma realization deepens, then when you see Paramatma in the heart of everyone sitting by the side of Jivatma, then what happens? Then you cannot hate anybody. It's impossible for you to hate anybody. You clearly see that covering the soul is this kalmash, kama, krodha, madaloba, moha, matsarya. But the soul is actually untainted. It's pure. With that understanding, one will not hate anybody. One can hate everybody alike. So in the Yoga Roda stage, these three shlokas are applicable. This beginning from Jitatmana Prashantasya, and then Jnana Vijnana Suptatma, and Surindhukradi Yudhasina. So this is a Yoga Roda stage in which Ashtanga Yogi is able to see all things alike and all people alike, both. So next shloka also, next week when we continue, we'll be talking about the platform of Yoga Roda stage. How should a devotee continue? And then Krishna tells the basic practice of Ashtanga Yoga, 10 to 17. He's explaining how Ashtanga Yogi should begin his practice. Actually, this chapter, if you read, nicely purpose of Prabhupada, it is to show that this kind of practice of Ashtanga Yoga is so difficult for a common man to practice. But a Bhakti Yogi can very easily achieve all this. So we will do a comparative study next week about Bhakti Yoga and Ashtanga Yoga, so it will become more clear. Hare Krishna.